All right, y'all, what is going on? This is your man, L. Jamal, coming through with another edition of Never Out of Bounds. Of course, this is the place where you can say what you want, as long as you got them facts. And today, good morning, by the way. I want to get into a few different things. I'm not going to wear you guys out too much with my voice today. But first things first, I did want to get into some March Madness. I did want to recap some of the highlights of Round 1, as well as the Sweet 16. Of course, we got the Elite 8 coming on a little bit later on today. And then I also want to get into the MLB season that just, you know, took off. There's a few games, of course, that we've seen so far. We're going to get into last night's scores, or yesterday's scores, as well as just what to look out for in terms of the season, teams, players, all that. I think we have a headline or two there as well. And then, of course, I got some NBA action I want to get into. Of course, the scores from last night. We're going to take a look at the standings. We are getting ever so close to the end of the season. So, of course, I wanted to keep you guys updated there. And of course, we're going to round everything up with one last segment. This one, we're going to be talking about, of course, Dan Snyder and all the Nickelodeon drama. It sucks being that I was a big fan of a lot of those shows growing up as a kid. Just seeing all that shit now just freaks me out, and it just kind of, damn, it fucks up a lot of nostalgia. But anyways, we're going to get into all that and maybe a little bit more. But if you like what you hear today, please be sure to follow me on Spotify. I'll be leaving the link for my Instagram in the description for the episode. And please be sure to check out the YouTube channel. Of course, the name is the same, Never Out of Bounds. Whole bunch of different content there. So please, you know, do me a favor and check me out a little bit. So let's get into it. Of course, March Madness, we in the thick of things. I do want to go through some of these highlights, of course, in round two. In day one of round two, we had one of the big ones with number five Gonzaga taking down number four, or at least the number four seed, Kansas, 89-68 was the final score. Kansas finishes their season at 23-11. For Gonzaga, they were led by forward Aaron Watson. He would get 21.6 rebounds. We also got forward Ben Gregg and also Graham Ike doing their thing, providing 15 points in terms of support. Ike would also get 9 rebounds. Excuse me, Greg will get 9 rebounds. We also got Kansas, you know, Hunter Dickinson, you know, came up a little bit short. 15 points from him, 5 rebounds, I believe was 4 assists. DeJuan Harris, KJ Adams both get 15 points as well. Harris will get 11 assists. Adams will get 6 rebounds. No McCullough in this one, so very surprised. I don't think he was really active at all in the tournament, if I'm not mistaken. So he was a big missing link for a lot of their success, but, I guess he just wasn't available. But Gonzaga, for their part, they were shooting lights out, over 60% from three, over 60% from the field, 50% from three. Just, you know, amazing showcase offensively for them. They would outscore the Jayhawks 46-24 in the second half. So, you know, there you go. We also got Tennessee. They will hold on to beat Texas in the second round as well. 62-58 was the final score. Texas ends their year at 21-13. For Texas, they were led by guards Tyrese Hunter and also Shendell Weaver. They will both get 13 points. Hunter would add 6 rebounds and 2 assists to his totals. And then for Tennessee, Dalton Knecht will lead the way for them, getting 18 points, also 9 rebounds. And then forward Jonas Idu, he will get 11 points, you know, 3 assists, 4 rebounds. And again, Tennessee holds on just enough to get to the next round. Some other highlights from round two. We do have Dayton. They will come up short against Arizona. 68-78 was the final score. North Carolina would get the blowout win over Michigan. And then we would see one of the 11 seeds, Oregon. They will go down to Creighton, 86-73 into overtimes. That was a really competitive game up until that second overtime, to be honest with you. It seemed like Oregon got a little bit tired. But they end their year at 24-12. In day two of round two, we have Marquette. They will hold on to take out Colorado. 81-77 was the final score. Of course, Colorado coming into that one as a 10 seed. So again, a really close game, you know, you know, when you think about the seeding. But Colorado will finish their season at 26-12. In that game, though, they were led by guard KJ Sampson, or excuse me, Simpson. 20 points from him, 7 assists, 5 rebounds. And then forward Tristan Da Silva would do his thing with 17 points and then 5 rebounds. For Marquette, they were led by their two guards, Cameron Jones. 18 points from him, 4 rebounds. We also got Tyler Kolick, I believe that's their center, if I'm not mistaken, or forward. 21 points, 5 rebounds, 11 assists, 3 players. They also had 3 more players, that being Marquette, scoring in double digits. So, again, their offense showed up, and it would, well, it showed up near the end. They got all the points they could get. It was almost like an all hands on deck situation. But again, they got it done. We do get Clemson. They get an upset win over Baylor. They were the 6th seed, that being Clemson. They get the win 72-64. Baylor ends their season at 24-12. For Clemson, they were led by guard Chase Hunter. He will get you 20 points, also 6 assists. We also got guard Joseph Girard III, 13 points, 3 assists, 3 rebounds. So again, people showed up, and again, they just kind of worked itself out for this team. For Baylor, Ray J. Dennis will get 27 points. He would lead all scores. He would also get 6 rebounds. But they were outscored in the first half, 35-25. So they came into the second half down already. And it just looked like, you know, for Baylor, again, they looked to have run out of steam at some point. So again, a little bit disappointing. I thought they would get past, get at least to the Sweet 16, maybe even the Elite 8. But not this year. Moving on, let's get to the Sweet 16. Let's get to day one. We have, again, Clemson. They get another upset here. This time they take down the 2 seed Arizona. 77-72 was the final score here. Arizona finishes their year with a record of 27-10. So not bad. Of course, they didn't win their conference championship, so, you know, maybe a little bit down for their expectations. But anyways, for Clemson, again, Chase Hunter would step up again with 18 points, 5 assists, 7 rebounds. P.J. Hall got 17 points and 18 rebounds. And then Ian Shefflin would also help out with double digits in terms of scoring, 14 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. And then for Arizona, Jaden Bradley, he would be the leading scorer coming off of the bench, though. 18, not that that's a bad thing, but just saying, 18 points, 3 assists, 4 rebounds. And then Omar Balo, he would get 15 points, actually a double-double here, 15 points and then 15 rebounds. We also got UConn. Again, they get the blowout win over San Diego State, 82-52. I'm not surprised by that. They came into the tournament with a blowout win, so, you know, at least in round one. And then another big upset here, we have Bama. They would take down North Carolina 89-87. That would end North Carolina's year at 29-9. For Bama, they had 4 players scoring in double digits, including Grant Nelson, 24 points, 12 assists. And then for North Carolina, we had Armando Baggett, the leading scorer for them, 19 points, 12 assists. Cormay Ryan, 17 points, 5 assists. And then the Tar Heels, again, just like with a lot of these teams that were upset, it was one of those cold shooting nights for them. 30% from the field, 37% from 3. They were outscored in the second half by 10, I believe. Yeah, 43-33. And again, you know, we have these upsets after upsets after upsets. We also got North Carolina State. They get it done, 67-58 over Marquette. Who would have expected that? And that one, the Wolfpack was led by DJ Horn, 19 points from him, 5 assists. KC Morsel will get you 15 points. They will hold Marquette to just 24 points in the first half. You know, again, at least offensively, Marquette had no answers, but they would get 20 points from Cameron Jones. He'd also get you a couple rebounds, and then Tyler Kohler will get you 17, 10 rebounds, and also 3 assists. But again, like I said, they just struggled to put the ball in the basket. North Carolina State played a tremendous defense, 33% from the field in terms of shooting for Marquette, and then also 12%, just 12% from 3. It just didn't happen for them. And then we have Duke. They would get the win over Houston, the first seed, 54-51 was the final score. Houston ends their year at 32-5. Very impressive, though. They got this far. They also won their conference championship, if I'm not mistaken. Just a couple losses in conference play overall. So again, they are looking into a bright future, but they would just come up short in this one. Kyle Filipowski would lead the way for Duke. 16 points from him, 9 rebounds. Jeremy Roach, 14 points from him. All of them came in the second half. He would also get 3 assists and 3 rebounds. And then for Houston, LJ Cryer would do his thing. He would get 15 points, 3 rebounds, and then Jerron Roberts will get 13 points and then 5 rebounds. Now this game, was very, defensively and defensively intense. Both teams making stops. Both teams just really playing with high amounts of energy, effort. They wanted to, stop the other guys. In the beginning, Houston would go up, by a few. Actually, they had like a 10-0 run almost, just attacking the paint, doing those type of things. But Duke, although they weren't necessarily, draining their shots right away, they seemed to show a little bit more range and a more balanced approach, meaning they were taking some jumpers here and there. They were going for 3 when they could, even Filipowski was. And eventually those shots would start draining. And it just came down to a couple little bang-bang plays. A shot came from Duke, and just to kind of separate them, I think to take them to the 54-point mark. And then, again, Houston tried to get some offense going. It just couldn't happen. They got one last bucket before everything was all said and done. But really good game played by both teams. Again, the score wasn't super high, but again, we know why. Both teams are just playing very hard defensively, and that's all you can hope for in some cases, just effort across the board. But today, Saturday, like I said, a little bit later on, we're going to see in the Elite Eight, number 3, Illinois, take on the first seed UConn, and then we're going to see a Southern battle between number 6 seed Clemson, and then against number 4 seed Bama. And then Sunday we're going to see a 1-2 seed showdown with Purdue. They're going to be taking on Tennessee, of course, and then of course we have NC State here matching up against Duke in the the nighttime marquee matchup. Now this one right here, I know a lot of people are going to already put, Duke as their favorite, but just because, again, they have so much experience playing each other through the regular season, there's so many matchups they've thrown at each other. My gut and my brain would not be surprised if NC State pulls off a shocker on this one, particularly if it's not very high scoring. It's just one of those things. I just feel like, you played each other so many times in a regular season. You went through a conference tournament. I don't know if they matched up against each other in the tournament, but again, so many times in a regular season, at least 3-4 times, whatever. And, twice. They get 2 matchups at least. So just, having, that experience, I would not be surprised if, NC State could pull off somewhat of a shocker. I just wouldn't be. Now let's move on to the NBA. Let's get through some scores. No real headlines here to talk about. But last night we had the Clippers. They would get a 3-point win against the Magic. 197 was the final score. The Clippers improved to 46-27, which is good because they've been really on the downtrend lately. I think they only won 1 in their last 10 almost, something like that. I don't think that's right, but they've been struggling pretty much is the point here. The Magic, they are 42-31, still kind of within the race of the Eastern Conference. But for the Clippers, Kawhi will lead the way, 29 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. Zubac will get 14 points and 9 rebounds. For Orlando, Paolo Banchero will be the leading scorer with 23 points, also 8 rebounds. Jalen Suggs will get you 15 points and also 5 assists. So again, pretty good game from the Clippers. They just eke it out. And again, they need those wins, going into the playoffs. But moving on, we have the Pistons. They get a win against the Wizards, but nobody cares about that one. We have the Lakers. They get a win over, sorry, they take a loss here against the Pacers, 109-90. The Pacers are now 42-33. The Lakers are 41-33. So near identical records. Pretty much they're on the same level. But for LA, they were led by AD, 24 points, 15 rebounds from him. Austin Reeves will get a double-double with 16 points, 13 rebounds. He'll also get a few assists as well. For Indiana, Pascal Siakam will get 22 points, 11 rebounds. He was their leading scorer. He'd also get 6 assists. We also got the Pacers. Overall, they played a really good defensive game. They will get 6 blocks, 8 steals, 16 turnovers. They were 4 16 turnovers, so really good effort from them. And again, they're fighting, again, for a spot in the playoffs. Well, they kind of got their spot. They're just looking for, this is about seeding, if I'm not mistaken, at this point. The Warriors, they got a win against the Hornets, 115-97. The Nets get a win against the Bulls, 125-108. The Cavs, they get it done against the Sixers, 117-174. For Philly, they were led by Kyle Lowry, 23 points, 6 assists. Tobias Harris, 21 points, 7 rebounds. And for Cleveland, they were led by Georges Niang. I never hear his name brought up too many times. 24 points, 10 of 14 from the field. Evan Mobley will get 20 points with 11 rebounds and 3 assists. So again, pretty decent game from the Cavs. They score over 100 points, and again, they're still got their spot as well that they're trying to hold on to. They're 45-29 right now. The Sixers, they're now 39-35 in a season that's kind of falling off the wayside a little bit. Let's see what happens in the playoffs, but they look bad right now. But the Thunder, they get a blowout win against the Suns, 128-103. The Thunder are 51-22. The Suns are 45-31. For Phoenix, they were led by KD, 26.6 rebounds, but that's all she wrote for them. OKC was led by Josh Giddey, 23.7 rebounds, 9 assists. The Thunder will shoot over 50% from the 3-point line, and also from the field in general. Just all around a really solid game. They led in every quarter. There was no signs of slowing down at any point. The Spurs, they get a win in overtime against the Knicks, 130-126. We had the Timberwolves getting a win against the Nuggets, 111-98. The Rockets, they hold on to get their 10th win in a row, 101-100 against the Jazz. The Heat, they blow out the Blazers, no one surprised, 142-82. And to wrap everything up, the Mavs, they get a win, a very important win against the Kings, 107-103. Now let's look at the standings real quick. We had the Boston Celtics, of course, on top of the East, 57-16 right now, 8-2 in the last 10. They're basically a top 5 team in both offense and defense. There's not much to say negative against them. They have the best record at home, so good luck to everybody who has to go visit them in the playoffs. The Bucks are number 2, 46-27, 11 games back, 5-5 in the last 10. They're also 14-12 overall with your boy Doc. Things are not looking great. They're still in the bottom in terms of defense, so there you go. Good luck, guys. There you go. The Cavs are here, 45-29, 4-6 in their last 10. Again, on the downward trajectory, but again, they have their third place spot here. We have the Knicks here at number 4, 44-29, 7-3 in their last 10. So they're getting things done. We have the Magic here at the 5th seed, 42-31. The Pacers are 42-33. The Heat are at number 7 here, 40-33, 7 games back, well beyond the leader. That's just how good the Celtics are. The AC will go to the Sixers, 39-35, 3-7 in the last 10. They looking terrible, though. I'm just coming from my opinion. I don't even think they would win in the damn play-in. But we have the Bulls here. They're trying to be scrappy and pull some shit together, 35-39. Same thing with the Hawks. They're staying steady, 5-5 in their last 10. They're 34-39 right now. Now, in the West, we pretty much have 1A and 1B, the Timberwolves and the Thunder, they're both 51-23. They're both 7-3 in the last 10. I can't distinguish the two right now until, I guess, the last day. So behind them, we have the Nuggets at 51-23, just a half game back from the action. We have the Clippers here, 5 games back, 46-27. We mentioned that. We have the Pelicans here at 45-28. The Mavericks here at 44-29, 9-1 in the last 10, so they've been surging. We have the Suns here at 43-31, so I read that wrong. My bad, y'all. So they're 43-31. They ain't looking that great either, just being honest with you. They look about average. They don't look like a 43-win team. just keeping it real. We have the Kings here at 42-31, 6-4 in the last 10, so they're looking pretty good, decent at least. The Lakers, they're 41-33, 10.5 games back. You know, they got their little AC spot to, you know, see what happens. We have the Warriors here at 39-34, so they're still in the mix, 6-4 in the last 10, so they've improved definitely. They're trying to hold on to their spot. But with that being said, we mentioned the Rockets have won 10 in a row. You know, they're looking hot right now. They're just a half game back from the Warriors. So, again, we got to make it to the last game, I guess, of the year. We'll have to see what happens. But anyways, let's move on. We're going to break down some baseball for a little bit. Of course, the 2024 season is upon us. What are we looking out for? Just to kind of break it down, I guess, division by division. We can start off in the AL West. We have the Rangers here. They're looking to repeat as World Series champs. They were one of the top offensive teams last year. They were third in team OPS, second in team average. Of course, we have Adelis Garcia returning, .245 batting average, .328 on base, .507 slugging. Course, really good stat line there. 39 home runs, 107 RBIs. Then we got Corey Seager here, third in the MLB in terms of OPS with a 1.013. Come on now. They're also top 20 in pitching, but that is an area of concern because Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer will both be missing some time on the injury list. I don't know if there's a true timetable on where any of them will get back. But with that being said, they are in a relatively winnable division. Their next bet, you know, in terms of competition, of course, would be the Astros. But again, they're older now. They are still good. I'm not taking anything away from them. They're looking for their 8 straight ALCS appearance. So that's how good they are. So they're not bad. They're just getting a little bit up there. But then again, we have an emerging, Seattle team out there. I don't think they're just on par just yet. And, of course, we have the A's and the Angels who are well off the beaten path. They won't be competing anytime soon. The A's don't even know where they want to play. And, again, you know, we've talked about it here, too. They don't even know if they want to have a team until they have a home to play in, whatever. Their situation is so murky, it's not even fucking funny. But moving on from them, if you look at the AL Central, of course, we have Minnesota. They won one of their first playoff series in a very, very long time last season. They're looking to improve on that. Outside of them, in that division, you don't see anybody else necessarily. Cleveland is not, you know, there yet. Chicago is still working on things. They've actually regressed if you've seen them the last couple of years. And of course, Kansas City, you know, for lack of a better word, they've been a dumpster fire. So again, I think your favorite going into this early part of the season, of course, things have to play themselves out, but I think you will go with the Twins. If you look at the AL East again, we have Baltimore. We have some, you know, a couple surprising teams. So Baltimore has been very surprising. They had their first 100 plus win season since 1980. They added pitcher Corbin Burns in the offseason, so again, they're improving there. I think one of their biggest issues was their youth, but since, you know, again, they are a year older, they're gonna be a little bit wiser, a little bit more mature, experience that all goes a very long way. So look for them to do their thing. I think they do get better. They also improved in terms of adding prospects. They're still really good at that. They just added the top prospect, shortstop Jackson Holliday. So again, they're good there. Again, the question now is, how do we work everybody in? Have people improved, like Rauchman, those type of guys? Are those guys ready to take another step up? Again, they haven't done a whole lot of this winning shit since the 90s with Cal Ripken and even before, so in the 80s. So again, they have to compete with the Yankees. The Yankees always have superstars. You know, what can we say? They have Gerrit Cole, last year's AL Cy Young, Aaron Judge, again, 1.019 OPS. He was second in the MLB in terms of OPS, 37 home runs. We got Juan Soto, but they haven't won a title in 15 years. They also, you know, missed the playoffs last season. So you got all that. Then we look at the NL. Of course, the Dodgers, they made their signings. They look pretty good. I think the only people that could maybe challenge them will be the Giants. they've, you know, had a decent haul. They brought in a decent pitcher with Blake Snell. In terms of who you want to look out in terms of players, well, let's finish the rest of these divisions real quick. Let's go to the East. Of course, we have, you know, the Braves. They got Ronald Acuña. Come on now. Ozzy Albies. You know, they're just too good on both sides. I mean, again, we can look at, you know, what they got going on in Philly. You know, they have a decent, some decent pitchers there. But I just don't think they have a really good team overall to keep up with what they got going on in Atlanta. We also got the NL Central. Of course, your Brewers are your main name there. At this point in the season, I don't know about the Cubs. They made a few splashes in the offseason in terms of coaching, at least their manager. They got a Craig Council. So you have a few different changes. So let's talk about a few different players for a little bit. Now, first up, we're going to talk about Shohei Ohtani, and at least hitting-wise, he had a solid year. He had a batting average over 300. He would also have 44 home runs, 95 RBIs. He did have a little bit of a down year on the mound, but I would say part of that was due to injury. I do not know how much of a factor he's going to be in this rotation. They're going to have him pitching for this squad because they seem to be so deep, but again, you never know. I think he's still dealing with rehabbing, at least on the pitching side of things from his injury. I think it affected more of his pitching as opposed to his hitting last year anyways. But again, really solid pickup for the Dodgers. Of course, we already know about them picking up Tyler Glasnow in the offseason as well. That pretty much solidifies, at least to me, that they should be the favorite in the NL West. With that being said, though, I think everybody... Well, I will say this. I think everybody, with the exception of the Rockies, have pretty much improved. So, again, it'll be a little bit of a tougher competition this season. Again, we do know about what the Diamondbacks can bring to the table. They end up shocking everybody anyways and making it to the World Series. But, again, I would say at least at this part of the season, at least on paper, you would say, you know, Shohei Ohtani pretty much gives the Dodgers the edge. At this point, again, he hasn't really shown up offensively just yet. But again, he, you know, he could get hot pretty soon. We do have Ronald Acuña Jr. here. He's coming off an MVP season. One of the first, well, actually the first season in history where a player could get over 40 home runs, over 70 stolen bases. So again, a jack of all trades. He's pretty good defensively as well. A part of a monster lineup for Atlanta that, you know, again, you know, pretty much can lead them to another title if they really want to. And then finally from the AL, we have Julio Rodriguez. Last year, he had a pretty good offensive season, 275, 333, 818, you know, offensive splits there. So pretty solid, 32 home runs, 103 RBIs. He's a part of a, you know, a young emerging Mariners team. So there's time that he can develop. That whole team seems to be, you know, still developing and, you know, getting better. So I think that's all good. A couple pitchers we want to look at. Again, we mentioned them before. Gerrit Cole for the Yankees, Blake Snell for the Giants. Again, for Gerrit Cole, he's going to be pretty much one of the major factors. Of course, they have other guys. We mentioned, you know, Aaron Judge, of course, those guys. But he's going to be a prominent factor in why they're successful, pretty much. And they sink or swim based on him being a true ace and really, him really, you know, I guess you would say, improving on or repeating what he did last season. For the Giants and Blake Snell, again, he's coming off an MVP as well. He's now finally been deemed as one of the top pitchers. Can he sustain that? Is he able to help take the Giants to the next level, who've kind of been, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily by the wayside per se, but they've, you know, kind of slipped a little bit. They've dipped a little bit. And that's pretty much their only real major play of the offseason. So it will be interesting to me, at least, to see if he can sustain. So moving on from that, we do have a couple headlines I wanted to get into. And first things first for the Orioles, you know, with all this stuff going on for them positively, they have changed ownership. Recently, they were purchased by a group headed by David Rubenstein, who pretty much runs this group called Carlyle, and they're basically based in Washington, D.C. They're a private equity firm, so financial services, all that. He's also a Baltimore native, so on and so forth. He purchased a team for $1.7 billion. The team was bought back in 1993 for just $174 million. And let's be real here. This team hasn't even been that good. But the increase in value is just so fucking crazy to me. That's why it's like, damn, baseball. It's like, and baseball seems to be so boring. Nobody's watching it. That's what it all seems like. But these teams cleared, like, really big amounts of dough. I don't know how a team like Baltimore, again, it's no real disrespect, but they just don't win a whole lot. They haven't won a World Series since I've been alive. They haven't really been to the playoffs a whole lot in that time either. But somehow their value expands from $174 million to $1.7 billion. I think that is kind of crazy. Now, he plans to keep the team in the city for, you know, the near future, the extended future. They eventually would sign a lease extension for Camden Yards out there in Baltimore for 30 years. So again, a very significant amount of time. So, you know, things should be, well, I don't want to say things should be, I guess, back to normal for them. But again, things, you know, will be back to business for Baltimore. They have that figured out. You know, again, this team, we talked about them, you know, already. They're young. They're looking to catch fire, you know, eventually. They're looking to improve. They're getting more seasons. So this team is in a, you know, a positive trajectory. And I think the ownership before made a decision to, hey, sell while the team is hot, I guess, you know, at their highest value. I guess that's pretty smart. One more headline I want to talk about before we get into the scores from last night. Of course, Shohei Ohtani. We mentioned him as a player to watch this year, but he has been embroiled into some drama. Doesn't seem like it's his own fault, though. It seems to be, you know, an interpreter that happened to work for him by the name of Ipe Mizuhara. He had been caught gambling. Ohtani's name was used. This is what kind of brought him into this. But again, he seems to, you know, be given, you know, well, he seems to be, you know, let off the hook. But Ohtani's name was used on two wire transfers, adding up to $1 million, and that was sent to an illegal bookmaking company in Southern California. So again, we got some weird shit going on, but again, it seems like it was just an interpreter. There was a criminal investigation going into it. Again, they would end up, you know, not really pursuing Ohtani, although he will be investigated by MLB. Why? I don't know. But Ohtani's camp did say that this is a result of a ongoing problem. Mizuhara has a gambling problem. The only thing that I would say back to that is, did you not vet him? Did you not know this? Why keep him around if you know that's his issue? That would be at least a yellow flag for me. Ohtani has been helping paying. Well, this is the claim that the interpreter would say. He, you know, would tell everybody, oh, Ohtani knows about all this. He's actually been helping to pay for all this. But it seems like that's not the case. He didn't know about these situations until rather recently, and he did help to some extent. But again, this, you know, this ongoing problem, again, has not been addressed, at least, I don't know, brought to Ohtani's attention for whatever reason. At least that's what the people in his camp are saying. He didn't know, they didn't know. I find it kind of weird, though, that somebody you deal with business-wise on an everyday basis, you know, you spend all this, you know, X amount of time with them, you don't know what the fuck he's doing. So I find that to be a little bit weird. They're saying that he stole the money. The question is how does the interpreter have access to your account? I could see, you know, a financial advisor, I could see his accountant maybe, but just his interpreter, that's a little weird. How does he get access to funds? Again, he was blowing through all, you know, his salary just to gamble. Again, this is all according to Ohtani's people. And it's just a little bit weird to me. It is a weird story. again, according to Ohtani, they never knew. They didn't know anything. He was stealing the money. Just all these weird things. And of course, you know, like I said, Mizuhara is saying, oh, you know, I told him he's been helping me the entire time. I don't know. It just seems to be really weird. I think the only logical thing is, I guess, you know, Ohtani might have known to some extent that he might have had financial trouble. He might not have known what the financial trouble was. He might have been helping him. I don't know how somebody not related to the money at all or would have access to any type of account numbers realistically. I don't know how an interpreter would come across these things to, again, get access to the money. So that's weird. I don't know about him stealing anything. So it's like a really, the more I think about it, it seems to be a little bit weird. I mean, I think, I wouldn't say Ohtani knows. Well, maybe he does. I feel like they all know a little bit more than what they're leading on. I mean, not necessarily Mizuhara, but everybody else that's claiming he's stealing or stealing or whatever. They seem to know a little bit more, you know. Well, of course they do, but they're not. That's what I want to say. They're not telling us. They're kind of keeping it kind of a little bit vague and just kind of just saying things, and it just seems to be murky. I don't think Ohtani did anything. Like, well, it's just weird. I don't know if he like cheated. I don't know if he get. I don't want to say he gambled or anything, but a situation like that is just kind of just, it's one of those really murky situations because it's like, well, how does he gain access to your account to steal? How do y'all not know about this? How long has that been going on for y'all to not know? That's really, or, you know, whatever. You know, it's a little murky. I'm not saying that he, you know, Ohtani did any wrongdoing. He is getting investigated by the league. So we'll just have to wait and see. So let's take a look at the scores. We are a few games in. Let's take a look at the scores from last night. First things first, we have the Brewers. They get it done against the Mets. 3-1 was the final score. We have the Braves here. They get their first win of the season against the Phillies, 9-3. Things will start off with a two-run home run from the Phillies' Brandon Marsh, but the Rays wouldn't score until the seventh inning. They would end up tying things up. Adam Duvall would hit a double, getting in two RBIs. They would take the lead in the eighth with an RBI single from Michael Harris the second, and their success would continue throughout the eighth inning. Then we get an RBI single from Ronald Acuna Jr., and Atlanta will score five more runs in that inning as well to seal the deal. Now on the mound for the Braves, Spencer Strider would get the win. Actually, he wouldn't get the win, but he would go for five innings. He will only give up two earned runs. One of them would be a home run. He'd also get eight strikeouts as well. Pierce Johnson will be awarded the win, though, going for just a little bit over one inning, getting two strikeouts. So, again, that's just how it is in baseball sometimes. I got to figure out how to determine that. I guess the game wasn't, you know, sealed. Wasn't sealed just yet when Strider was still on the mound. So I guess whatever Johnson did was just enough to get that win for him. But again, how they award wins to pitchers in baseball is a little bit weird to me. But anyways, moving on, we have an AL matchup between the Blue Jays and the Rays. The Rays would get the win 8-2. Both of these teams were 500 at 1-1. Now for the Jays, they would strike first with a home run from George Springer. Now the Rays would respond in the bottom third with Brandon Lowe getting a grand slam. Yandy Diaz would also get a two-run single at one point in the game as well. And then Randy Arozarena, driving an RBI as well. On the mound in the win, Aaron Civale would be awarded a win in this one. He would go for six innings, just giving up one run. He would also get six strikeouts. Chris Bassett for the Blue Jays, he had a tough go at it. His first L of the season, gave up six hits, four earned runs, just not really a good game for the Blue Jays all around. But moving on, we had Pittsburgh, they get a win against the Marlins. They start off the year 2-0. Wow, back-to-back wins for the Pirates. Let's celebrate. They don't really win. Anyways, final score is 7-2 here. The Yankees, they get a win against the Astros, 7-1. We have the Rockies here, they take a loss here to the Diamondbacks, 3-7. We have the A's here. Again, more people showed up to the tailgate to protest the team than the actual game. They take another L here, 6-4. We have the Mariners. They get a win against the Red Sox, 1-0. Only one run was needed. Again, as we mentioned, J.P. Crawford gets a solo home run in the sixth inning. And on the mound, George Kirby had a really good outing. Went for six innings, eight Ks, zero earned runs. He was would get the win. Andres Munoz got three strikeouts on the way to his first save of the season. And for Boston, they were 0-4 runners in scoring position, so it's not like they didn't have a chance. They just couldn't pull in the runs. The Giants would get the win against the Padres, 8-3. We do have the Cardinals here. They take a loss to the Cardinals to wrap things up for last night. 6-3 was the final score. The Dodgers are 3-1 in the year, of course. They had a couple games in Korea facing off against their divisional rival, the Padres. So their season started a little bit earlier than everybody else's. But again, like I said, 6-3 against the Cardinals, who are now 0-2. For the Dodgers, they would get things going quickly. They would get a solo home run from Mookie Betts in the bottom of the first. Teoscar Hernandez, another one of their offseason additions, he would home run in the second and then get another three-run home run in the bottom of the fourth. So they were just doing their thing. You know, we have a somewhat of a rally with the Cardinals. They try to get, you know, well, they could only get three runs in the eighth inning. They tried, but they kind of fell apart. It just didn't work. But on the mound for the Dodgers, Bo Miller would get the win, his first of the season. 6 innings of work for him. He gave up no earned runs, and he also had 11 strikeouts. So, again, Dodgers are looking pretty solid. They seem to have a decent rotation. One thing I will say, though, is Ohtani, of course, hasn't shown up. At least, hitting wise, yeah. So we'll see. It's going to take some time. He's probably adjusting. And, you know, we have a long way to go, particularly with baseball. So buckle up, y'all. All right, y'all. I'm going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we will be talking about the man, the myth, the legend of debauchery and just weird shit. Yeah. And not in a good way. Dan Schneider, the infamous. All right, y'all. We'll be right back. All right, y'all. So let's get into this whole Nickelodeon situation. Now, I guess I'll share my personal feelings first, I guess. Just like a lot of y'all, I grew up watching a lot of this shit. You know, All That was probably one of my favorite shows on that channel. Of course, Rugrats, Kenan and Kel, The Amanda Show. You know, for many years I watched, you know, those shows, their reruns, shit. If you know, I can, I try to come across some episodes of that shit online now, you know, when I'm really, you know, feeling it, right? With that being said, though, there was a point in time where I started to distance myself away from, you know, not just that channel in particular, but a lot of, well, all three of those major channels, right? Remember the cable trio that we had as kids growing up? A lot of us, you know, with Nick, Cartoon Network, and Disney. Yeah, yeah. You know, at some point, like around 12, 13, I just cut all that shit off. Now, on the surface, I'm not going to lie to you. And this was part of it, too. Like, again, I was 12, 13. I always had more mature taste to begin with. That just was my upbringing, just what everybody around me was watching. So I always had a more mature taste, and I always had a different palate. So it was easier at that point to just say, oh, man, I'm too old for that shit, that little kid shit. And, you know, that was, again, that was part of it. But there was another subtle reason as well, I believe, too. And the reason why I say subtle, because I felt it was more unconscious or subconscious decision. Because, mind you, I didn't like those type of cartoons, but I will fuck around with some anime for years. I still love anime, right? And again, I'll still go back to some of those older shows like K. Arnold or, you know, Cow and Chicken and shit. I will never watch Steven Universe. For what it's worth, long story short. The only show that I could say that I like that's modern or whatever in this era would be probably Gumball, but that's about it. Any other show I really don't care about, I don't really do animation no more. But again, there was another subtle, almost like I said, subconscious type feeling. And what it was, I'm gonna tell it to you straight. That shit started to get weird to me, particularly Nickelodeon, for what it's worth. And not so much the cartoons, although I believe SpongeBob was always weird, and after the third or second season, I was done with that too. To be honest with you, I always was, will always be a Rugrats kid. I don't really fuck with SpongeBob. And after, to me, he got overexposed within about two seasons. Like I said, three max. I was done with that. But the live action shows, like the shows after the Amanda Show, took this weird ass turn, and particularly the sitcom types, even though, we do know the drama that Jamie Lynn Spears would find herself in and the rumors surrounding all that, which is crazy. That's what I'm saying. Just so much. It just got weird. And for what it's worth, I felt that weirdness. I felt that shit, being portrayed on TV. I felt it in the scripts, the storylines that they were coming up with what I was watching. And it made me cringe, and it made me not want to watch the shit, and it pushed me into other forms of media. Well, first of all, other genres of TV, more mature tastes, more adult themes, and then more so gaming and shit like that, and internet shit, multimedia eventually. It just got really weird, and it did get focused on. I remember when it started to kind of happen. 03, 04, it was really weird. It did get really like body part focused and really focused on making weird situations with these girls. One example that I can just think about, not necessarily all the way back when as a kid, but this happened on a more recent show, I guess. I guess you could say 2010s, late 2000s. I think Demi Lovato was on this one, or one of them singers, yeah. And they got a whole scene where she's trying to stick a whole toe in her mouth. Like, that's weird, dude. Like, who the fuck does that shit? Who the fuck writes that into a fucking script? And then there's this another scene where they got her, she's over here trying to squeeze shit into her face or something, and it's looking all types of suggestive. And I'm like, what the fuck? Who does this and put who puts this on TV? Who thinks about this type of shit? A weird motherfucker who don't get no pussy, Dan Schneider. That's who does that shit. And again, I felt that shit coming on even as a kid, and it just made me not even want to fuck with it. Like, I felt like I might as well fuck with more adult shit anyways. If I'm gonna watch shit like that, I might as well watch, what they got on HBO now. Show me the rated R shit now. I might as well watch rated R. I'm not gonna sit here and try to have this motherfucker be subliminal with me. I know what you're talking about, and I don't want to watch that shit. That's not what I wanted to watch Nickelodeon for. Shit, if I wanted to go watch something nasty, I'll wait till late at night, and then I'll turn on like Taxi Cab Confessions. What the fuck? This is not what I want, dude. So it got really weird really quickly, and like I said, it reflects what was going on, at least some of what we're hearing now, as to what was going on in the background. Him having these, improper relations with these younger. Actresses in particular. Amanda Bynes comes to mind. He's even been linked to Jamie Spears. I did not see the documentary Quiet on Set, as a disclaimer, but these allegations about Dan have been out for years now. If I'm not mistaken, I might even, talked about them a little bit here already, long time ago. At this point, probably 3 years ago. So if I did, but it's something that's already been known, so I didn't really want to waste my time watching it again. The only thing, or watching, something similar again. The only thing that was not privy to me was the involvement of another, I guess we could say producer, writer, whatever. I can't remember his first name, but the last name was Peck. But he's not in any relation to Josh Peck, of course, from Drake and Josh. But his last name was Peck, and again, he had those same type of essay abuse allegations as well. And not only is there the essay abuse allegations, there's the racism allegations, and overall, just a toxic workplace where people were abused for their time. their energy. And again, all those fetishes that this guy had, he portrayed that on TV, and that's and with underage people, no less. It's one thing to be, I guess, for lack of a better word, a deviant. It's one thing to do that shit with adults and be fully open about it and live that lifestyle. And how people, you know, rock and react to that is how they react to that. And you just kind of just live with that, right? But it's a whole nother thing to press that on the children and to groom them and to try to, you know, really become a domineering figure in their life because you feel you hold so much power over them. And to an extent, as the producer, yeah, you can make or break, but obviously there's a power structure even over him. And that's what's even more disturbing, because it's obvious that this type of behavior goes on in these higher realms too, because if they really gave a damn, or if they really were on something different, they would have been fired, Schneider, or they would have already looked into the man and into the matter for that fact. But they didn't even think about firing him until one of his shows started to flop. That just goes to show you what type of industry we're in. And for what it's worth, you know, for everybody saying, oh, Hollywood is wicked now and wicked this and they're so sexually deviant and they're doing this to people, let's be honest with ourselves. This was going on since its inception. This was going on in the 40s and 50s, you know, in all different types of, you know, well, at least in the entertainment echelon, to say the least. We'll start there. Who knows what happens in these backdoor meetings for all these different types of industries, right? Who really knows, you know? But again, there's some type of selling out for everybody in some of those fields. And I know people don't want to hear that. You know, they want to hear that there's these just people. There's levels to, you know, selling out. Or, you know, no, again, a lot of these people, once they've made it that level of fame and fortune, they've made oaths to whatever entities that are, you know, controlling this. And they are all satanically bound. And you can sit there and try to make excuses, but they're all with the shit. Okay? I know y'all want to pick and choose. Again, we talked about this last week when we talked about Diddy. Y'all want to pick and choose who y'all want to be mad at and have outrage for being a pervert, while y'all sit back and want to listen to other perverts. It doesn't work for me. So they're all perverts. They all deserve to die. Now, well, that's a little bit drastic, I guess. But they all deserve to be in prison at the very least for what they do. Again, you see, you know, Diddy getting raided. And although I'm not all keen on the human trafficking, the sexual trafficking element of it, I don't know where there's been interstate transport or any type of transportation on that regard. But again, it's obviously been proven that he is with the shit, particularly with younger men. And that, again, needs to be highlighted. That needs to be addressed. That needs to be condemned. And he needs to be dealt with, just like your man, Daniel Schneider. Same situation, damn near, except he likes little girls. But again, it doesn't really matter because they're minors. Again, it's one thing to have a foot fetish. But again, leave that to 21 and up. That's just what it is. That's just how you should roll. But again, when you look like that, you know, big fat tub of lard, I understand. That's, you know, no, I don't really understand. It's just, damn, nigga, I don't know what to tell you. I still wouldn't have made those choices. That's weird, dude. That's fucking weird. That's just, and again, that's what I'm saying. It's like, even as a kid, it was this really weird feeling that I would get, like, they're doing too much. Like, this is getting cringe, not because it's like funny cringe, but it's just like it's really weird cringe, and I don't want to look at it cringe. Like, there would be times where I would be sitting there watching Nickelodeon content, and it just gets so weird that I would just, let me just change the channel for a little bit till it's whatever, till the scene is over. It would virtually get like that. So now it makes all the sense to me in the world, you know? Imagine being accused of impregnating not one, but two of the people you work under, and they were minors, or at least minors at the time you were messing with them and whatever, you know. There's accounts, at least on a documentary, of the little, you know, snippets that I did see, where they're basically saying straight up, like, yeah, he would go off, you know, for hours somewhere with Amanda Bynes and just be chilling or doing whatever. We see him or her giving him back rubs, and it's just That's weird, dude. Like, who the fuck is on that type of time? Don't you have a girlfriend? Can't you get a girlfriend? You have money, I guess, but they're just weird and weak-minded individuals. And they're being allowed to, you know, coexist, and not only coexist, but really be put in places of prominence. And I think that's really indicative of just how wayward our society can be and how backwards it is in a lot of different ways. We like to project a lot of things about America, but they don't always ring true. And that's definitely one of them. And I think they need to address him, maybe even raid him, just like they raided Diddy recently as well. He deserves the same type of treatment. He's fucking disgusting. And that's how he should be dealt with. All right, y'all, I'm going to call it a wrap for today. If you like what you heard, like I said, please be sure to follow me on Spotify. Please be sure to check out the Never Out of Bounds YouTube channel. As I mentioned in the beginning, I will be leaving the link for my Instagram within the description of the episode. As far as what we got going on next episode, we will be getting into at least the Elite Eight of the NCAA tournament. Maybe some more baseball, course, basketball. We get near the end of the season. Maybe talk about the MVP race for the first time this season. I haven't talked too much about that. Share any headlines in terms of, you know, I guess big time news, international, at home. Let's see what's going on. Haven't really talked about any of the election in a couple weeks. Anything about the election in a couple weeks. No Trump updates just yet, even though there's a lot going on with him too. So maybe we'll get into some of that. And of course, I am working on a new YouTube project. It'll take some time. At the moment, I'm just now kind of getting my script together for that. But I'm working on the breakdown of Philia, aka Brotherly Love. It's going to be a look at the relationship between Avon Barksdale and Stringer Bell, of course, on The Wire, how their relationship fell apart. Well, first of all, how it came to be, then how it fell apart, and, you know, the ramifications, all that good stuff. Anyways, this was your man, El Jamal. If anybody hasn't told you yet, peace out, one love. Appreciate you taking your time out to listen to all this. And if he hasn't told you, I love y'all. Have a good day.